Thus, in a physical environment, the frequency of the same soul energy is altered. The human body changes the color of these energy patterns further. When healers identify color auras around human beings, these colors are largely reflections of physical manifestations. Besides thoughts from a human brain, which are influenced by our emotional makeup, central nervous system and chemical balances, all the vital organs of the body are involved in human auras. Even muscles and skin play a part in creating the physical energy around us. Certainly, there are correlations between the soul mind and our bodies, but physical and mental health are the prime determinants in human auras. I should state that I do not see human auras. All my information about them comes from specialists in this field and from my subjects. I am told that as we go through life, our temporary body fluctuates rapidly and this affects the external color arrangements of our energy. It takes many centuries for soul colors to change. Eastern philosophy holds, and I agree, that we have a spirit body which exists in conjunction with the physical and that this etheric body has its own energy outline. True healing must take into account both the physical and subtle body. When we meditate or practice yoga, we work to unblock our emotional and spiritual energy through various parts of the body. On occasion, when I am talking to a subject in trance about the distribution of light energy from other souls in their group, I will be told about stronger energy patterns emanating from particular areas of what seems to be a human shape. Just as we may bring imprints from a former life into our current life, we can also take body imprints into the spirit world as silhouetted energy reminders of our physical incarnations. For a while, during my questioning in the next case, I wondered if this subject was letting her conscious memory about chakras seep into her unconscious explanations. Chakras are supposed to be vortex power sources that emanate from within us outward at 7 major points on the human body. This subject felt that chakras were a spiritual expression of individuality through physical manifestations. Case 33, Dr. N, you have said that Roy is one of the members of your family in this life who is in your soul group. When you look at Roy's focal point of energy, what do you see? S, I see a concentration of pinkish yellow coming from the middle of his body form, the place where the solar plexus would be. Dr. N, what body form? Why is Roy presenting a physical body to your group? S, we show the features of the bodies we have occupied that pleased us in life. Dr. N, well, what does an energy concentration from the stomach area mean to you? S, Roy's strongest point of personal power in his lives is his gut, regardless of his body. He has nerves of steel, laughs, he has other appetites in this area, too. Dr. N, if Roy's metabolic energy rate shows that attribute, can you pinpoint a distribution of extra light energy coming from certain places of the body in other members of your group? S, yes, Larry has his greatest development from his head. He has been a creative thinker in many lives. Dr. N, anyone else? S, yes, Natalie. Her power essence is developing faster from the heart area because of her compassion. Dr. N, how about yourself? S, mine comes from the throat, because of my communication skills through speech in some lives and singing in my current life. Dr. N, do these energy points have anything to do with the projection of human color auras? S, as far as color, not generally. As far as strengths in energy concentration, yes. Spiritual meditation using color, the healing properties of multicolored lights for energy rebalancing in recovery area were quoted in the last chapter from a soul called Banyan. People who have read my work about the spirit world have asked if this sort of information about color can be useful for physical healing. Spiritual meditation as a means of getting in touch with our inner self is of great benefit in healing the body. There are many good self-help books on the market which explain the various forms of meditation. Since color transmission is the expression of a soul's energy and that of our guides, perhaps I ought to cite one example of meditation using color. The six-step meditative exercise I have chosen comes from a mixture of my own suggested visualizations and those of a courageous 54-year-old woman I worked with, whose weight dropped to 6 tiny pounds during her fight with ovarian cancer. She is now in remission after chemotherapy, and the speed of her recovery baffled doctors. A number of my clients generate a sense of spiritual empowerment by the use of meditation with colors. Those who have severe physical health problems tell me the best results come from meditating once a day for 30 minutes or twice a day for 15 to 20 minutes. Please know I do not offer these steps of meditation as a cure for physical ailments. The power of each person's mind and their ability to concentrate is different, just as is the nature of their illness. Nevertheless, I do feel one's immune system can be boosted by connecting with our higher self. 1. Begin by calming your mind. Forgive people for all the real and imagined wrongs that have hurt you. Spend 5 minutes cleansing, where you visualize all negative thought energy, including fears about your illness, as a black color. Think of a vacuum cleaner moving from the top of your head to the bottom of your feet, sucking up and pushing out of your body all the darkness from the pain and hurt of your disease. 2. Now, create a light blue halo above your head that represents your spirit guide, whom you call upon for help while sending out loving thoughts. Then spend another 5 minutes concentrating on your breathing while counting the breaths. Measure your breaths carefully while thinking comfort in and tightness out. You want to harmonize your breathing with the rhythm of the body. 3. At this point, start to think of your own higher consciousness as an expanding white or gold balloon to help protect your body. Say in your mind, "I want that part of me which is immortal to defend the mortal." Now begin your deepest concentration. You will pull the purity of white light from the balloon and send it as a power beam into your body organs. Since your white blood cells represent the strength of your immune system, visualize them as bubbles and move them around your body. Think of the white bubbles as attacking the black cancer cells and dissolving them with the power of light over darkness. 4. If you are receiving chemotherapy, support this treatment by sending out a lavender color, as you would see from an infrared heat lamp, to all parts of your body. This is the divine color of wisdom and spiritual power. 5. Now, send out the color green for healing these damaged cells from the effects of the cancer. You might blend this color with the blue of your spiritual guide intermittently during the most difficult periods. Pick your own shade and think of the green as a flowing liquid mending your insides. 6. Your last step is to once again create the blue halo of light around your head to sustain mental strength and courage over a weakened body. Expand it around the external parts of your body as a shield. Feel the healing power of this light of love both inside and outside. Think of yourself in a state of suspension and close by, repeating a mantra such as heal, heal, heal. Meditation as a daily discipline is hard work which pays big dividends. There is no right way to meditate. Each person must find a program which links their intellectual and emotional systems in a framework that suits their needs. Deep meditation brings us into a divine consciousness and a temporary release of the soul from personality. With this liberation, one is able to transcend into a different non-dimensional reality where everything in the focused mind is unified into a single whole. The woman with ovarian cancer was able to help her doctors by bringing total mental concentration to bear on healing her body. When the mind is in a pure, centered state, we can find who we really are, that essence we may have lost somewhere along the road of life. Daily meditation is also beneficial as a means of connecting with the presence of loving spirits. Forms of energy color. Besides the effects of color, another external means of investigating souls in groups is to compare their shapes. These energy forms would include symmetry versus irregularity of shape, brightness or dimness of light configurations, and the qualities of motion, all of which provide spiritual signatures of the group members. When observing other souls, many people in a trance state are aware of a soul's vibrational resonance. After I review the nuances of color tone with a client, together we will study the pulsation and vibrational rates of motion of their soul companions. In discussing the energy form of any soul, my first question is, how much energy was left behind in the spirit world before the current incarnation? This question has much to do with the activity or passivity of the soul and relates to brightness and dimness of energy. Despite the amounts of energy, however, all manner of energy generation is identified by character, capacity and mood of the soul. These are variables that can change after a series or lives. During my pre-hypnosis intake interview with a new client, I inquire about the cast of characters in their current life. I make notes about all their relatives, friends and past loves as well. This is because I will have a front row seat in the play that is about to unfold from their minds and I want a theater program. My client will be the leading actor in this drama, with others in supporting roles. In the case excerpt which follows, it can be seen how quickly information is gained through questions involving both color and form about a supporting cast member within a client's soul group. During my intake interview with Leslie, my client, I learned of her sister-in-law, named Rowena, who was a real thorn in her side. Leslie, whose spiritual name is Susius, described herself as someone who seeks security in her lives and tends to be around peaceful people. In her current life, this subject remarked, Rowena seems to enjoy confronting me and challenging all my convictions. What follows is the opening scene of Leslie's mental picture of her spirit group. Case 34, S, very upset, oh, I don't believe it. Rowena is here, or rather it's Shath, that's Rowena. Dr. N, what's wrong with seeing the soul of Rowena in your spirit group? S, frowning, with a tightening of the mouth, well, Shath is one of the disruptive ones. Dr. N, disruptive in what way? S, oh, compared to those of us who have smooth, unruffled energy vibrations. Dr. N, Susius, as you observe your sister-in-law, how is she different in terms of color and shape? S, still verifying the recognition of Rowena, that she is all right. Her orange energy is pulsating rapidly, the usual sharp, jagged edges, that's Shath. Sparks, that's what we call her. Dr. N, does the form she presents to you indicate she is as antagonistic to you here in this spiritual setting as in your current life? S, Leslie is now adjusting to Rowena's presence and her voice softens. No, actually she draws us out, she is good for our group, I can see that. Dr. N, I want to consider how her projections are different from your own energy in color and form. What can you tell me about yourself in the spirit world? S, mine is soft white with rose variations, 1 a.m. called bells by my friends because they see my energy as fluid droplets of steady rainwater which give off an echo, of faint tinkling bells. Shath has a sharp clarity to her energy and I seconds tints of gold. Her energy is bright and very overpowering. Dr. N, and what does all this mean to you and your group? S, we just can't be complacent around sparks. She is so restless, a swirl of constant motion. There are always questions from her and challenges about our performance. She enjoys taking parts in our lives which shake our complacency. Dr. N, do you think she is less abrasive in the spirit world than in her current body as Rowena? S, laughs, you bet. She chose a high-strung body with a short fuse, which amplifies everything. This time, current life, she came as my husband's sister. Shath can be so annoying, but now that I see who she really is, I know her motives come from love and wanting the best we have to give. Laughs again, we help her to slow down, too, because she has a tendency to jump into fires without looking. Dr. N, is there anyone in your inner circle of friends whose energy is similar to Shath, to Rowena? S, grins. Yes, that would be my best friend Megan's husband, Roger. His name here is Sair. Dr. N, how does his energy appear to you? S, he sends out geometric, angular patterns that zigzag back and forth. They are sharp waves, like his tongue, and from a distance his energy reverberates like crashing cymbals in an orchestra. Sair is a daring, intrepid soul. Dr. N, based on what you have been telling me about energy shapes, Could Sheth and Sair, Rowena and Roger, have a compatible matchup in life? S. bursts out laughing, you must be joking. They would kill each other. No, Rowena's husband is Sen, my brother Bill, a peaceful soul. Dr. N, please describe his energy. S. He has a grounded energy which is greenish-brown. You know Vines is around when you hear a gentle swishing. Dr. N, Vines? I don't understand what that means. S. In our group when you get a nickname, it sticks. Sen has vibrational waves which look like a vine, with the patterns forming braided strands, you know, as with long hair. Dr. N, does this energy pattern identify Sen, your brother Bill, in some way? S, sure. Complex but constant, very dependable. It reflects his ability to weave a variety of elements together in lovely harmony. Vines and sparks blend beautifully because Rowena never lets Bill get too complacent and he gives her an anchor in life. Dr. N, before I go on, I have noticed that the spirit names you have given for your soul group all start with the letter S. Does that mean anything? I'm not sure I am even spelling them correctly. S. Don't worry about that, it is the sound which gives off the intonations of their energy motion. That reflects who my friends really are. Dr. N, sound? So besides the color and form of your group's energy, their waves have sound linked to each of them as we might hear on Earth? S, well, sort of, with us, it's energy resonance we identify with Earth, although you could not hear these vibrations with a human ear. Dr. N, could we go back to your best friend, Megan? You mentioned her, but I don't know her vibrational pattern color. S, with a warm smile, her wispy, pale yellow energy is like flickering sunlight on a field of grain, smooth, even and delicate. Dr. N, and her character as a soul? S, absolute, unconditional compassion and love. Before going further with the issue of sound and the similarity of some spiritual names, I should explain the karmic link between my client, Leslie, and her best friend in this life, Megan. To me it is an emotionally compelling story. During my intake with Case 34, Leslie explained to me that she was a professional singer and that occasionally her throat and larynx were especially tender. I regarded this as simply an occupational hazard and thought no more about it until we reached the death scene in her past life. It was then necessary to deprogram a former body imprint directly related to Leslie's throat. In their past life, Megan was Leslie's younger sister. As a young girl, Megan had been forced by her father to marry a wealthy, brutal, older man called Hoger, who beat and sexually abused her. After a short while, Leslie helped Megan escape from Hoger in order to run away with a young man who loved her, Roger. An enraged Hoger found Leslie that night and dragged her to a secluded place where he raped and beat her for hours to learn the whereabouts of her sister. Leslie told Hoger nothing until he began to strangle her for information. She then bought her sister more time to get away safely by giving Hoger the wrong directions. Hoger strangled Leslie to death and rushed away, but he never found Megan again. Later in our session, Leslie had this to say. Singing in this life is an expression of love because my voice was silenced over love in the last life. Sounds and spiritual names. We have seen how color, form, movements and sound are individual markers of souls in their groups. These four elements appear to be interrelated, although light energy, vibrational shapes and their wave movement, as well as the resonance of sound, are not uniform among soul group members. However, there are resemblances with these elements between certain souls, and sound can be the one most obvious to the spiritual regressionist. There is a language to sound in the spirit world that goes beyond the systemization of spoken language. I am told laughing, humming, chanting and singing exist, as do the sounds of wind and rain, but they are indescribable. Some subjects pronounce the names of souls within their group as if they were balancing musical chords in order to harmonize them with each other. Case 34 is an example of how the pronunciation of spiritual names within an inner circle of friends has an affinity of sound with the letter S. In Case 28, two spiritual teachers were called Bion and Rillon. There seems to be rhythmic interplay between certain soul energies in a cluster group manifested in this way. Some hypnosis subjects have difficulty in producing spiritual names. These subjects say the names of souls in their minds consist of a vibrational resonance which is impossible to translate. It gets more complicated. One client stated, "In my experience, our real soul names are something similar to emotions, but they are not the emotions of humans, so I can't reproduce our names by any sound." There is also vocal symbolism connected to names, which may have hidden meanings that a client is unable to decipher in human form. Nevertheless, for many clients who are struggling to remember a spiritual name, the use of phonics and a cadence of sound may serve them well. A subject might use vowel sounds to characterize members of their cluster group. I had a client who named three souls in his group as Chi, Lo and Su. It is not at all uncommon for me to have cases, such as the last one, where group names emphasize one letter of the alphabet. For some reason, many spiritual guides have an A ending to their names. I do have subjects in trance who find it easier to spell spiritual names for me rather than try to pronounce them. Yet these same clients will state that the spelling doesn't mean as much to them as the sound. My probes of spiritual names can also elicit shortened versions of the actual name. One client said, "In my spirit group, the nickname for our guide is Ned." Not satisfied with this, I persisted and eventually had this guide's full name down on paper. The result was Nida as Buarian. I got the message. During the rest of this session we stayed with Ned. Privacy is also a factor when I have a client who feels that giving me the name of the spirit guide would somehow compromise that relationship. I must respect their concerns and be patient. As the session progresses, this uneasiness might wear off. For instance, a client told me her guide was called Mary. Then she added, "Mary is letting me call her by that name in front of you." I accepted this and we continued on for a while when, abruptly, the guide's name became Mazukiya. There are moments in a regression when it is not appropriate to push too hard for information. Finally, I should report that our own soul names can change a little as we evolve. I had one highly advanced subject tell me her name as a young soul was Veena, which had now changed to Kavina. I asked why, and Kavina replied that she was now a disciple of a senior guide called Karafina. When I inquired as to the significance of the similar phrasing of these names in the spirit world, I was told it was none of my concern. There are clients who have no reticence in closing down questions in a hurry if they feel I have stepped over the line of privacy. Soul study groups. In my first book, one devoted whole chapters to examining beginner, intermediate and advanced groups of souls and their guides. I also gave case examples of group energy training where souls learn to create and shape physical matter such as rocks, soil, plants and lower life forms. It is not my intention to repeat myself on these topics except when, by doing so, I can further the reader's knowledge of other aspects of life in soul collectives. In this section I am going to examine the relationships between learners within soul study groups as opposed to the structural aspects of schoolhouses and classrooms reviewed earlier in this chapter. Spiritual learning centers are not necessarily visualized by my clients as having a classroom or library atmosphere. Quite often these centers are described as simply the space of our home. Even so, the pictures of spiritual learning environments can change rapidly in the minds of clients discussing their instruction periods. When my research into our life between lives was published, some people were critical of my analogies of human schoolhouses and classrooms as spiritual models for the instruction of souls. One Colorado couple wrote me to say, "We find your references to schools in the afterlife to be distasteful, and this is probably due to your own bias as a former educator." Others have told me that for them, schools were a long series of bad experiences with bureaucracy, authoritarianism and personal humiliation at the hands of other students. They did not want to see anything resembling human classrooms on the other side. I know there are readers who have had bitter memories of the time they spent in school. Sadly, schools on Earth, as with other institutions, contain shortcomings wrought by human beings. Teachers and students can be guilty of arrogance, petty tyranny and indifference to the sensitivities of others. Wherever learning takes place, there is scrutiny. Nevertheless, many of us remember having caring teachers who gave us essential information while we formed lifelong friendships with fellow students as well. The functional aspects of acquiring spiritual knowledge are translated by the human mind into learning centers, and I am sure our guides have a hand in creating visualizations of earthly edifices for souls who come to our planet. People in hypnosis talk about the similarities of form and structure to Earth in some respects, but there are great differences in other aspects of their reports. My clients tell me about the overwhelming kindness, benevolence and infinite patience of everyone in ethereal study areas. Even the analysis of each soul's performance by fellow students is conducted with total love, respect and a mutual commitment to make things better in the next incarnation. Soul groups appreciate individualism. It is expected that you will stand out and make contributions. There are forceful souls and quiet souls, but no one dominates, just as no one is obtrusive. Individualism is appreciated because each soul is unique, with strengths and weaknesses that complement others in the group. We are assigned to certain soul groups for our differences as well as similarities. These differences in character are honored because souls who share their lives bring a rich personal wisdom to every lifetime experience. Souls love to tease and use humor in their groups, but always they show respect for one another, even with those who have been in bodies that have hurt them in life. More than forgiveness, souls exercise tolerance. They know that most negative personality traits connected to the ego of the body of the person who brought them sadness and heartache were buried when that body died. At the top of the discarded list of negative emotions are anger and fear. Souls volunteer both to teach and learn certain lessons, and karmic plans may not always work out in the way they were intended, given the variables of earthly environments. One remember after one of my lectures, a psychiatrist raised his hand and said, "Your discussion about soul groups reminds me of tribalism." I responded that soul groups do appear to be tribal in their intense loyalty and mutual support for each other in a spiritual community. However, soul groups are not tribal in their relationships toward other groups. Earth societies have a nasty habit of mistrusting one another at best and demonstrating bitterness and cruelty at worst. Societies in the spirit world are inclined to be rigorous, moderate, or compliant in their interpersonal relationships, but I see no evidence of discrimination or alienation either within or between soul groups. Unlike human beings, all spiritual beings are bonded together. At the same time, souls strictly observe the sanctity of other groups. When I was a part-time evening college teacher, I found that some of my students, including the adults in my classes, would confuse facts with their own value patterns. While struggling with conceptual problems, there were times when they argued from a false premise and even contradicted themselves. This, after all, is the nature of students. Eventually, they learned to extrapolate and synthesize ideas more effectively. From this background, my introduction to instruction in the spirit world gave me perspective. During the early years of my hypnosis research, I was astounded by the total lack of self-deception in spiritual classrooms. I saw that teacher guides seemed to be present everywhere, although not always in a manifested form. Our teachers come and go in spiritual study sessions but never interfere with self-discovery. Although souls themselves are not yet omniscient, by having infinite knowledge of all things, they have no doubts about karmic lessons and the part they played in past life events. An axiom of the spirit world is that souls are always hardest on themselves in terms of performance. Within soul study groups, there is a wondrous clarity of rational thought. Self-delusion does not exist, but I must say that the motivation to work hard in every life is not uniform among all souls. I have had clients tell me, "I'm going to skate for a while." This can mean slowing down their rate of incarnations, picking easy incarnations, or both. Although the soul's teachers and council may not be happy with this decision, it is respected. Even within the spirit world, some students choose not to give their best at all times. I believe they are a distinct minority of earthbound souls. To the Greeks, the word persona was synonymous with mask. This is an appropriate term for the way in which the soul utilizes a host body for any life.